Welcome to the Masterlink podcast with James and Stefan, getting to know creatives in the music industry. Available on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you like our podcast, you can support us on patreon.com/themasterlinksessions. You can watch all of our previous music videos by visiting masterlinksessions.com, or you could simply buy us a coffee from buymeacoffee.com/masterlink. Hi everyone, welcome to the Masterlink podcast. My name's James.
Hi, it's Stefan here, and today we're going to talk to musician and songwriter Leonie Jane Kennedy. How are you?
Hey guys, yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Excited.
Very excited. Yeah. And you've recently moved to London, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I'm studying a master's in songwriting at ICMP in Kilburn, but I currently live in Kentish Town.
Ooh. Wow, that was a very succinct answer there.
We will talk more about that. That's very exciting.
Yeah.
A master's in songwriting. That's really cool.
Brilliant. ICMP.
May I dive straight in, though, with
Go
a question?
For it.
And the question is, what recently has excited you or is exciting you musically? What's happening?
There is an artist called Madison Cunningham that I was very fortunate to go and see in Manchester with my partner earlier this year. I can't quite remember how I discovered her. I think it was on a playlist on Spotify a couple of years ago. And there's this one song called Pin It Down that has the most mental groove on the guitar. I think it's a Fender Jag that she was using. And the tone of it, the kind of groove that she had was just absolutely insane. I was hooked straight away. So I listened to a lot of her other stuff. And she's got this really old acoustic guitar from the 60s, I think. And just, again, the tones, the kind of way that she plays is very unique. Her style is almost, being from a prog rock background myself, I can hear and see the elements that she's bringing from different genres and putting into her own writing. And she is just an exciting person at the moment. So I've recently won tickets for me and Willis to go and see her again in Glasgow. And that's exciting for me as a musician, just because I've grown up listening to Rush and not being able to see them live until recently when they did the Taylor Hawkins show. Mm. So to have an artist that's right now current that I'm listening to and actually getting along with and thinking, you know, this could be, I'm in it for the long haul with this artist. Like, I feel like I'm an actual fan. Mm. And it's the first time that I've actually felt like I'm involved with that kind of a scene. And, you know, that is really exciting for me.
Wow. Have you met her?
I've met her, yeah. We kind of exchanged a couple of words. I offered her my services in terms of a support artist.
Of course.
You've got to plug it, though, aren't you, as a musician? So I said to her in Manchester, I'll give you a CD the next time I see you. So I will be seeing her again in Glasgow. So I'll chuck it on stage and be, do you remember me? But yeah, I met her and we just spoke about the guitar because, like I said, the tones and stuff that she was getting, I had to know what she was using. And I think it was a parlour guitar, actually, that was a really old-looking, sounding, just an amazing instrument. And there's a song that she does called, I think it's, I can't remember. It's not Pin It Down, not the one that I was on about, but it was a one with an orchestra in the background that I'll show you guys at some point. Mm. It's just insane, the kind of notes that they can, if you hear like dissonant chords and clashing sounds, imagine that, but in the sweetest way. That is her in a nutshell.
Are you able to separate yourself from being a musician and songwriter and being a fan?
I don't think so, no. Mm. I can be a fan, you know, like what I said with Rush being a big influence on me. That for me is, obviously, I'm purely a fan, but at the same time, I'm involved with a lot of the music scene with the Rush community as well. So I'd like to say yes, I can, but at the same time, if I look at examples of what I've done with the music that I love, for example, the Rush side, the Madison Cunningham side, and few and far between. I mean, the first band I ever saw live was Status Quo. And now I'm speaking to the current drummer and guitarist to maybe work with them on some of their stuff. So it's a case of I can't separate it, because as much as it's a career as well as something that I love, it's something that is kind of ingrained into me. I've got to get involved.
Brilliant. And so we sense there's a lot of excitement around guitars, guitar sounds, guitar playing. And you also write your own songs and you'll sing them, right?
Yeah.
So what's the relationship between your lyrics and you being a vocalist and your guitar playing?
Can you repeat the question just so that I can get a decent answer for you?
Well, you know, I'm just interested because I got like a super, like the sense I get is that you're very excited about guitar and guitar tones, but obviously you write your own music. And I just wanted to, in your own mind, how you view yourself, do you see yourself more as a lyricist, as a vocalist, or as a guitarist, or you don't draw a line between those three things?
Yeah, they definitely come as a package, I think, because growing up as a kid, it was always kind of guitar. The songwriting came a bit later on, as well as the voice. I'd obviously sing along a little bit if I was, you know, four, using a Spanish guitar, and I'd sing like Wonderwall or something. Just your standard kind of songs that everyone has to play.
Did you just say you were four singing Wonderwall? Wow,
probably.
I feel like Yoda in age now.
But I mean, at four as well, it was when I actually started writing music. There's a video of me sat on my mum's lap with like a SpongeBob t-shirt on, playing a Spanish guitar and basically ripping off a song that I heard on the TV. So I was already kind of experimenting by listening to other things that were out there. And there was the end scene of Ghost Town with Ricky Gervais and Greg Kinnear. I remember sitting and like constantly rewinding the cast and the, you know, the list of people that were in a part of the film, because it was a John Mayer song that was playing in the background. I didn't know John Mayer at the time, but I was practicing on my guitar, just trying to find out how to play this riff whilst also compensating for the lack of a band, essentially. So I'd put it all together. So after years of doing that, with a lot of different genres and different music, I've got this style of my own playing now, based around the fact that it is just me and I don't have a band, or I didn't at least at the time. So a lot of what I'm doing is compensating, but also kind of putting everything in a box so that I can do it myself and bring that kind of element of it to the live shows that I do acoustically. And that's where the voice comes into it. Ah. So I can harmonize with the guitar stuff that I'm playing. Say I play a really cool riff that's a descending riff or something. I'll figure out the harmony for it that's like a step up, and then I'll sing it alongside it, which is almost jazz. It almost has a jazz feel to it. And I don't listen to a lot of jazz, but I can feel that coming out of it based around what I've listened to and there being so many different elements to the kind of music that I'm into. It's just an all-round thing. I wouldn't say I'm a guitarist or I'm a songwriter. The kind of end goal for me is to, you know, tour the world as a musician in my own right, so that I can bring this element with the band and maybe acoustic stuff as well, because it's two different completely things when I'm on my own and when I'm with the band. But either or, that's what the end goal is. But if not to do that, I'd love to do something to do with songwriting, because I know that I can hear those elements and kind of bring it out in other musicians if they're in the room.
And what's interesting, you're talking about songwriting, because we had in one of our previous podcasts, we heard that someone didn't want to study songwriting. They didn't want to get, like, you know, they didn't want any interference from the outside. And you're kind of doing the opposite now. So you're studying for masters in songwriting. And what made you choose that?
I guess I'm of the Stephen Fry mindset to constantly be a student, I guess, because I'm always going to learn regardless of being in education or not. So why not use the time whilst I'm in London to have something to get out of it that not is just on paper, but that can get me, you know, to another country maybe. If I wanted to teach songwriting at, I mean, I know there's Berklee College of Music in Valencia, and I love Spain. I was brought up in Spain with my grandparents taking us on holidays throughout the years. I love the Spanish culture and the music and flamenco. I really love all that kind of stuff. So if I ever wanted to go abroad with a job or songwriting, I think having a master's is a very easy way to do that. And I say easy, I've just started. I don't know how difficult this master's is going to be, but I've got an idea of songwriting, but I don't know what they're teaching at a master's level yet, and I'm actually just intrigued just to see what they might bring out in me, because even doing my degree with ACM in Guildford, that was great because there was certain things that I already did know, but then there was a lot of experience that I didn't have writing with other people, and actually having other professional songwriters and musicians to work with, because there have been times in my life that I've had to work with other people and there's been absolutely zip. There's been nothing going on in the brain and I've had to kind of pull it all out myself, and I end up writing the song myself rather than it being a co-writing thing, which has meant I've avoided it for a long time. But I'd like to be able to do that, and I guess I'm here to just explore that side of it as well, rather than just have an excuse to be in London. I want to get something out of it that I might not know about yet, but I know it will be something. So
just as a point of reference, so we're recording this on the 13th of September, so you really haven't started your master's yet, right? At all?
No.
Yeah, okay, fine.
No, I've literally just had my induction yesterday, so it was Sunday. There was a meet and greet, but I think that was predominantly degree students.
Yep.
Yesterday, I got my kind of diary and had a welcome talk from some of the people who worked there, like the dean and stuff. And there was a freshers event yesterday that I went to at night, which was like a showcase of the bands that are already there, which was incredible. The musicians are fantastic.
Oh, wow, you were impressed, yeah? Nice.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I didn't know what to expect, to be honest, because, I mean, I just didn't know. You don't know, really, do you, until you see it. So there was a really cool bass player. I think she was called Tay. And it was almost an instrumental band, but there was massive Jeff Beck vibes with the bass player for Jeff Beck. And I love that. I love all that kind of music. So it took my liking straight away. And also just everyone was really, really kind. They're all in the same boat. They come up to you and have conversations and say, oh, what are you studying? You know, it's a really friendly environment, and I'm excited to start, but I've not started yet. I think it's next week or next, maybe this Thursday, actually. I don't know. I need to get my stuff together.
It sounds great. I always loved music, the music education culture for that. And on one level, you get obviously education and experience, and on the other level, you meeting kindred spirits. And that's like the sort of the balance of the two I always loved. So you seem to have experienced a little bit of that already. I'd like to ask you about your lyrics. I know you don't want to be called a singer-songwriter. I'll call you that for a moment. because you sing and you write songs. And of course, you're a musician. And every singer-songwriter has like a sort of a different strategy that is changing all the time, how to get to a final song. Do you sometimes start with lyrics only, or you generally start on guitar, or how do you go about writing your music?
Most of the time it's definitely guitar, because I grew up in pubs essentially playing with house bands. So my local pub, they had a house band called Barkin, who took me around the, you know, local music scene. And I played a lot of electric guitar with them, and their guitarist, Pete Lawrenson, taught me a lot of improvisation. So predominantly for songwriting, because they had such a unique original music as well, I took a lot of influence from them. So it's predominantly I start with guitar or a riff that I get in my head. I'll pick up the guitar and try and figure it out if it's going through my mind. But it can be the same sometimes if I'm driving, especially. There'll be something that I pass on the road or something that I'm thinking about that might come to mind, and I'll get some lyrics that might be relevant to whatever state of mind I'm in at the minute. And I'll just kind of have to keep singing it until I can stop the car and record it. So the majority of the time it starts with the guitar, then I'll do a lot of what I said with the harmonisation of it just to see what I can work with. So I'll sing some harmonies along the chords or the riff that I'm playing, and I'll try and figure out what genre it is before I carry on writing it, because I've struggled with that in the past. I still don't particularly know what genre I am. I've got elements of prog, rock, there's a lot of blues and soul in there as well, but then, like I said, a bit of jazz. So it's quite difficult to pinpoint a lot of the songs, but definitely starts with guitar.
Have you found that you've had to practice finding bits of inspiration, or sort of like the art of actually noticing things and taking in things and absorbing and going, ah, that's a thing, I should use that. Because I can imagine I would see the same things as you see, and it's just like, blah, just like there's a sign, there's some things. Obviously, I don't see what you see. Have you had to practice that in a way? Does that make sense?
Yeah, in terms of songwriting.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's something that's come to me over time. I've not actively thought, oh, I'm practicing this.
Mm.
But it's something that I can recognise thinking about it. And, you know, if I go and see a live band, if there's a tone or if there's a sound that I like and I feel a certain way. There was a friend of mine, Elliot Kennedy, who's actually helping me produce the album at the moment. He was on a stream thing online recently, talking about like the most inspirational moments of like live music and the way that it makes you feel. And he said something that actually made me click a little bit, which was, you don't remember what's around you when you think about those most incredible moments of your life. If you're at a show, you think about the way that you felt.
Hmm.
And you don't remember, you know, who was in front of you, what the light color was, things like that. You remember how you felt. And that's actually a lot of what I'm going to be studying with my master's as well, for the chosen subject, is the impact that music can have on you as a listener and how it can actually help with mental health. So it definitely has come across over the years that I absorb a lot of what I listen to, and I just try and like make what I can out of it. But it's not something that I've actively thought, I need to do this,
sure,
or I want to do this. It's a feeling that I get.
Mm.
And it's that urge at 3 o'clock in the morning, if I've got something in my head, I go and pick my guitar up. Even if I'm just tapping on it, I've got to do it. So it's like a buzz. It's a feed inside me, I guess. Mm. I think all musicians have the same element.
Wonderful obsession.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. 100%.
And your words. So the words to your tunes, do they normally come last?
They can come kind of mid and last, yeah. So there's no specific structure, but I can see that whatever mood the guitar riff or chords that I'm playing, I'll try and match the lyrics with that. So I'm not going to write a really happy song and then sing something quite depressing, which I used to a lot, but I've gotten out of that habit. So I'll write the guitar first, in sections as well. So I'll start off with a verse and then maybe get to like a pre-chorus, or I'll get the chorus first sometimes, and the lyrics will definitely change on the mood of it. But the lyrics are a lot of the time come out as like noises. So I don't write the lyrics until I have the melody down.
Mm. All right.
Which is just a way for me to get like vowels and like the structures and the kind of stanzas of the actual writing, so that it fits what I want to hit, like the rhythm essentially of the vocals.
Yeah, that's what John Lennon and Paul McCartney would do.
Is it?
Yeah, you saw that. Have you seen the Beatles documentary?
I haven't. The big
long one with, directed by Peter Jackson. That was a thing I noticed, because obviously you're a fly on the wall watching them writing these like massive hits.
Right.
And they just sat there and they're just like, well, we haven't written verse two yet. So they just sing these like nonsense words over the top to get the flow right, so they can sort of keep going.
Yeah.
And then what's really funny is that like I said, they'll just say random words, but then they'll be like, oh, hang on, what was that? That was really good. Let's keep that. And it was fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So it's cool that you do the same thing, that you're sort of finding the shape of the tune.
Yeah.
I should
really listen to the Beatles. I think that's something that I really need to do, because I've never listened to them. There's only been, you know, I know a couple of songs just from them being on in pubs and being popular.
Mm.
A few friends like them as well. But it sounds like there's definitely something similar there that I could actually learn from as well, just from the way that you're saying, if that's what they do. Because I do the same thing. If there's a word that pops out, I will use that word and I will base the rest of it around that word.
Yeah.
And just try and figure out what I can do with that.
Yeah.
So
if we can
cool.
recommend that, I mean, that,
oh,
that
yeah.
Peter Jackson, I mean, it starts quite slow, but it's definitely, I think it should be a prerequisite to all musicians to watch right?
Yeah, well, I mean.
No, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, like the pantheons of great, really. I mean, Rick Rubin in his podcast, we like his podcast. He, you know, I don't know who he was talking with, but he said, hey, like, you know, don't concern yourself with what your contemporaries are doing, just get the 100, you know, the generally perceived 100 best records of all time and study them and study their people and what they've done, and then you're going to do well and don't worry about what your contemporaries are doing. I mean, it's a pretty strong statement. And yeah. And the Beatles are probably one of those bands that belong to those, you know, 100 most critical acclaimed bands in the world. And I find this process, the way you're doing it also, and the Beatles have done it, fascinating, because we know singer-songwriters and there's no right and wrong. And some people like write a story and then they're creating the melody afterwards, and then they're creating the bed, the harmony around it. Like, so it's, it goes in the completely opposite way than anything in between. Fascinating how many ways can lead to a song, and it's all valid, so it's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man. Can you, are you able to tell us a bit about PRS? Are you still involved with PRS and their guitars stuff? Because I noticed you were on their YouTube channel. This is probably a few years ago now. I think you were.
Yeah, I think it might have been. You were recording 2019. Something.
Yeah. So how did that come about? Because that's a massive guitar manufacturer, which is fantastic.
Yeah. I'm incredibly lucky to be involved with them. My involvement isn't as in depth as I'd like it to be. I'd love to be more involved, but I've known a friend of mine, Ace from Skunk Anansie, for a long time. I met him at a competition that I won in 2014. That was called Rock the House. So that was essentially a competition where I won the under 19 singer songwriter award, got to perform in the Houses of Parliament, and essentially got a Yamaha and Orange endorsement at the end of it.
Hell yeah.
So that was, it wasn't a part of the competition, but they approached me afterwards and essentially endorsed me with some equipment. Yamaha gave me a guitar and a PA, and I got an amp, which I've still got in my room. So I met Ace at this competition, and he told me a lot about ACM, actually. So he essentially gave me the inspiration to go to university. I wasn't really considering going to university, but then once I knew his involvement with ACM at the time, I kind of said, right, I need to be down south. I'm going to trust Ace. I'm going to go and do what he's recommending. So I did, and it's with Ace that the PRS endorsement came around, because he's sponsored by PRS, and he uses their, he's got a signature guitar with them that he uses on tour with Skunk Anansie, as well as a lot of other stuff. So I think Ace at the time, I was raving to him about this kind of limited edition ebony Floyd Rose guitar. And it was a limited thing that they brought out, and I was obsessed with it, because I'm into like all my kind of rustic wood, and I just like that aesthetically. I think it's brilliant. It's quite artistic. But I saw this guitar and fell completely in love. So I said to him, look, this guitar is insane. If there's any way that you can get me a discount, I would melt. And I think he actually showed his, not the boss, but like one of the lead people of PRS in Cambridge, a video of me. So they went, right, we'll help her out. And then I got the guitar.
Wow.
So that was essentially the endorsement. But they've been really, really great. Ace specifically is my kind of connection with them, because I think there's a partnership with Daddario or something, or there's some kind of connection with strings, where Ace has sent me like a pack of strings for Christmas, and like a PRS strap as well, and some PRS cleaning kits. So I guess it's just they were happy to let me represent them with the guitar. Otherwise, I wouldn't have got it, surely. So that was amazing. But in 2019, me and Ace went to the PRS HQ in Cambridge. I think it was 2019, might be 2018, can't remember. A long time ago for me anyway. But we went to record some acoustic stuff. So we did some of my original music on my PRS Alex Lifeson signature acoustic, which I got for my 15th. So that wasn't a gift as such from them anyway. It was a gift from my mother. My mum gave me that when I was probably about 15, 16. And that is like my number one acoustic guitar is the PRS Angelus, I think it's called. But that is the guitarist from Rush. That's his signature PRS acoustic. So I used that in the recording studios at Cambridge with some of the team. And it was brilliant. Yeah, we just got a couple of songs down and then they put me on their channel. And it's obviously done wonders for my social media.
Yeah.
100%. Like I'm so lucky to know the people that I do and to be involved with things like that. And Ace is a massive help. He's actually with ICMP now. So I've kind of followed in his footsteps in a way.
Cool.
So yeah, that is the extent of the kind of relationship at the moment. I would like it to go a little bit deeper.
There's a really short thing. I'm so with you. I used to have the catalogue of the PRS guitars when I was younger. Yeah. I was just like, I want all of them.
Oh, that's so nice. That's the so design funny. Of them is insane.
Anyway, that was it.
Well,
sorry.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I'm a little bit old and I just visited my parents in my country of origin, and I found this. My mum asked me, hey, can you just clear a lot of your old stuff?
Brilliant.
And I found a 1984 catalogue of Ibanez basses.
I remember
how I just was sitting there every day, just going through those 10 pages, just looking at those basses that I knew I'd be never able to afford.
Yeah.
You know, the want. And so what I'm saying with that, I totally get you guys like really
it's,
dribbling
it's just
over
so visceral.
Guitars, you know.
I want it.
I literally have all of them. Like, I've got a stack of magazines in a Dr. Martens box underneath my staircase, what do you call it, ladders. that I did the same thing. Like, for me, it was Gretsch guitars. I think the Gretsch White Falcon I saw and just died. Like, yeah. I ended up getting a really cheaply made copy of the Gretsch White Falcon. That it looks phenomenal and it's a real Gretsch, but it's just not the White Falcon.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still, to this day, that guitar is.
I find it so funny. I think humans are so wonderfully weird and bizarre. It's great, isn't it? I did the same thing. Like, Mike Sturgis will walk into the studio, and he will hit the bass drum once, and I'll go, "Oh, that sounds fantastic!" And it's just ridiculous, but it's brilliant, isn't it? It's such a shared connection. It's sorry, I'm going off on one. It's just really funny. I love it.
It's nice to see you excited, James.
I love it. Well,
on the note of all those fabulous instruments, some of them more affordable than others. how do you find earning a living from music?
What living?
Please expand on that.
I will. The most income that I've actually had out of my entire 10 years, if you like, professionally of being a musician is in the past year since I went freelance and I got my merch together. So because as mentioned, I've been involved in a lot of the Rush conventions. Mm-hmm. I actually sold out of mugs when I did that convention because they're there for Rush, a lot of the fans, but because I did the Rush songs acoustically and I played a couple of my own tunes as well, a lot of people kind of, I think it's more of an exciting thing to be involved with the musicians that are a part of a community as well. So I sold out of my mugs and, you know, I've got T-shirts available now as well. So I've actually earned more money in the past year from selling merchandise. I still haven't made the money back. Like, I've still got stuff that I can sell to actually make the money back. But in terms of actually things being done, that's pretty much all I've ever had. There's been gigs on occasion where, you know, it'll be a function gig. I think I've actually only ever done, like, maybe two function gigs in my life. One was with a band, and it was a friend's 50th, a friend of a friend's, and I hated it. I absolutely detested it. I hate function stuff. I don't ever want to go into a function room again and pretend that I'm enjoying myself.
Yes.
But it was...
Wow.
Yes.
No, honestly...
applauding you, honestly.
I'm so with you.
You know.
It was fine. Like, you know, it's a friend of a friend. I wanted to do them, you know, a good show. So we did some classic 80s stuff and that. But to actually, it's soul destroying. And you know Jesse, he used to work a lot in Nashville and he used to do covers and it took his love for music out of him. Mm. And it's the same thing for me. So I don't want to, as much as I hate doing covers, I know that it's necessary at times to build your audience, which is what I'm trying out now. I've got a covers show at the Aloft Hotels in London, if anyone's around. I think that's on the 10th of October. And that's just a covers show, but I'm bringing the same element as I am with the Rush covers by changing them up so I don't hate every moment of it, so that I am bringing an element of my own songwriting to the songs that already exist. But yeah, what was the question?
It doesn't matter. But it was no, just a second shout out to Jesse Hoff there from Lazy J. Go, Jesse.
Lady G.
Totally. We love that you know about our questions. Our questions are really.
It
doesn't matter. You
it
know,
was
like,
how do
I mean,
you find how yeah. do you find earning a living from music was our question.
Right. Yeah. Wow. There is no living in music for me. Like if I want to do a gig and I want to network and make contacts and actually get somewhere for the long run, I'm not going to make any money in the meantime because I'm networking at the moment, doing open mic nights, getting to know the people that run them in London. And that's been great because I've been given a headline slot with the band at the Buck's Head in Camden on the 9th of October. So that's something to look forward to. It's not well paid, but, you know, we get some free drinks, some free food, and the guy that runs it owns like 30 other pubs in London. So it's not a lot of money in the meantime, given the amount of work and time that all musicians put in. But it is something that I will never stop doing. So why don't I just do it? Do you know what I mean?
Great. Well, wonderful attitude. And in terms of your own music, are there tunes or EPs or albums that you want our listeners to listen to of yours?
Yeah, I have a single that was released in 2020, just after we came out of lockdown. I decided something needed to be out there for people to kind of get the gist of my original music. So I released Life Like This on Spotify, Apple Music, kind of anywhere that you can listen to it, it will be there. And Life Like This was recorded by John Gallen. You might know John Gallen from ACM.
Yeah, John. Shout out to John.
Yeah. It's John, yeah.
Love John. Love you, John. No, he was amazing. He did a whole live album with us. We just haven't released it yet because the plan is we're recording at the moment. Well, we've done recording, but we're working on kind of finishing up the album by the end of this year. It's been pretty much 2 years in production, proper production, because of just issues with people and things and time. And there's just been a lot of issues. So it's coming to a close now with some really, really, really great people that I'm working with. Elliot Kennedy from Steelwork Studios in Sheffield. And Nick Andrew is a fantastic musician who's helped me on the Rush album as well. He's in a band called Zippertongue, I believe. Does a lot of stuff with Darren Reddick from Planet Rock. He's in a function band with him. But they're both amazing and they're helping me out massively with the tones and the sounds that I've kind of had in my head for so long. And now it's finally coming out and I'm really excited about it. But the album won't actually be out until next summer, I don't think. Okay. That's just so that we've got enough time to plug it and get like a campaign and a release done. But at the moment, Life Like This, you can watch the YouTube video of us playing supporting Catfish at the Electric Theatre.
Oh, cool.
So that is the kind of live video that we did with John.
Brilliant.
Nice. Very cool.
And on the note of, you mentioned already Spotify and Apple Music, and I'd love to ask that question. Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, Tidal, etc. Friend or foe?
I have no idea, to be honest. I can appreciate the access to the music, but it's the same thing with music being the one kind of career, or one of many, actually, that don't kind of bring in the money. But I'm not sure. You can listen. There's so much on there that, you know, I wouldn't be able to go out and find a lot of the music that I've found on Spotify just from listening to a vinyl shop, because there's algorithms and things that throw music your way. You know, Madison Cunningham we discovered through a playlist. Mm. So there's a really, really good element to it that I think can be really good. But at the same time, the lack of money is just a little... It does take the mick a little bit. It's not even a penny for every play. Like it can be really, really good, but at the same time, like, it does take the mick a little bit in terms of the financial position that it's putting a lot of artists in. Mm-hmm.
And you're putting your music up on Spotify, presumably, though, right? As you said, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, because I would love for someone else, if they like my music, to discover me through a playlist or through an algorithm. Like, I'm not going to stop people from listening to the music and stop them from potentially coming to a future show just because I don't agree with the terms of a company that is ultimately going to do what they want anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Wow. Gosh.
It's great. It's great because we're always asking a lot of people about it, and everybody has such a unique take on it. You know, we find it fascinating.
quick shout out to your band. Who's in your band?
I've recently just lost my kind of primary players, which was Will Plunkett, who I've known since college, but he's moved back to Blackpool now, and James Jackman, my original drummer, he's doing a lot of function stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's not around at the moment. So at the moment I've got Anmol Mahara, the drummer, and Joe Scholar on bass, both incredible musicians, and they're so professional. They get stuff done instantly. Like they make really good suggestions as well for live performances, and just BVs as well, is one thing I've wanted to get down for live shows. And Joe's fantastic. He's
cool.
He's absolutely nailed it. So I'm proper happy with these guys at the moment.
How's the three piece sound? Does that suit? Because if we just go back to what you were saying earlier about you accompanying yourself, you know, and filling out all the spaces on the guitar, is that the reason just for keeping you as the sole guitarist?
At the moment, I guess that's why, yeah. But I don't want it to stop me from being able to perform with other people, because I would like to be able to just strip it back a little bit and leave some room to fill it out with different sounds rather than just keeping it a three-piece. But it works at the moment. Like for the live shows and for my songs at the minute, it's filled out enough for pubs. And, you know, if we went to a higher level, I'd want to get BV, like, I'd want to get backing vocalists. Mm. I'd want to get a keyboard player. I'd want to get, like, a slide guitarist or something ridiculous. Yeah. Like, the whole kind of Steely Dan vibe is what I'm going for.
Oh.
Like, I would love to have, like, a big group of people just to back the music and bring out the elements that I can hear. But at the moment, given time, money, kind of space, there's no way that can happen unless I have the money. So at the moment, it works, and I'm really happy with it. But at some point, I would love to get a whole bunch of people together and make it sound really good.
I remember seeing there's a Gary Moore album, Blues Alive, which was recorded in 1997, I think. Mm. Brilliant album. It's got you know, the whole, but it's got, you know, drums, percussion, keyboards, brass, backing vocals, other guitarists. It's huge sounding album, and I just had that on repeat. And then I went to see him, thankfully, just before he died. I went to see him at Brixton Academy, and I was so sad. It was just a three piece, but I was blown away by what the three piece could create.
Yeah.
I mean, he is just an incredible sort of force. Mm. So yeah, it's I can imagine it works having a three piece, as well as I can imagine it would be wicked with loads of musicians as well.
Yeah, so that's it.
And maybe one more time, where's your gig? You plugged the gig early on. Maybe you can send some more people your way. Where was the gig that's coming up for you?
Yeah, I mean, if you want some diversity, there's an acoustic show that I'm doing on the 29th at the Camden Club, which is opposite the Roundhouse. So that's an acoustic slot. But then we've got the band show headlining the Buck's Head in Camden on the 9th of October.
Great.
Tickets are free. You've just got to sign up on the Eventbrite page, which there's a link in all of my kind of social media or my website. There's a gig section on my website that you can just click and register for a ticket.
And what's the website address?
It's leoniejanekennedy.com.
There you go.
Brilliant. Nailed it.
Simple.
Simple stuff. Hey, thank you for taking time to doing this with us, and all the best to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Cheers.